this week in 1997, a 2-1 win at Villa Park did little to quell the rumours of a move to Dublin, with the Norwegian owners saying, "We wouldn't have invested all this money unless we had a chance to compete with Arsenal, Chelsea, and Spurs with a comparable crowd and stadium in Dublin." With the same old Wombles, we're back. Welcome, welcome, dear listener, to the Same Old Wombles. I'm Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by Adam Proctor and a very special guest, Angus, the chair of the DTB. Welcome, welcome.
Thanks for having me,
How have we
guys.
been doing? Adam, let me start with you. Adam, how are you?
I'm good. I've had a great weekend. Over excited all weekend, pretty much, which was a little bit stressful. in a good way. I met up with an old friend of mine in London on Friday and didn't realise that they didn't know the whole Wimbledon story. So that got me all prepped for Saturday because I explained how awesome we were as a fan-owned club and that we were back, obviously. And then, of course, it was really nice actually going to the ground. Like most of the people, stewards and security were like, "Welcome back." It's like, I mean, we hadn't missed that many games, but it was really nice. It was really nice. And of course, the game was just mad. I mean, I was just.
We'll come on to that in a second. It was completely crazy. And Angus, welcome. Thank you for squeezing us in, because I believe you've just had a meeting but prior to this, and you've got a meeting afterwards.
Yeah, we're busy today. I don't know if that's normal for us, but we do seem to have quite a bunch of meetings every week, and they're for different reasons with different groups of people. So today I had a meeting with our secretariat about a bunch of things, and then later on we're talking to the supporters trust or the supporters group behind the London Broncos. So not the ownership, but they're equivalent of the Don's Trust, I suppose. And I don't know anything about them or how they're constituted or how that works in rugby, but they wanted to have a chat with us. So we'll have a chat with them because we feel like that's something that AFC Wimbledon should do, championing fan ownership and trusts, whatever the sport is. And they happen to use our stadium and they want to talk. So we'll talk to them.
That's brilliant. And that you're right, that is so what we should be about, supporting fan-owned clubs. And I mean, it is going to be interesting. I don't want to get sidetracked for the minute. I want to come back to it, because what's happening with them, I think, is a really interesting thing. But first, let's just talk some football. Let's talk the Crawley game and the Carlisle game. I mean, I didn't see the Crawley game live. And Angus or Adam, I don't know if either of you did as
I
well.
didn't know, and I'm really cross about it because I saw Lewis Ward played a goal, so I've wanted to see him all season.
I mean, I love the fact that we decided to go three up and then let them back into it. Almost like saying, "Come on, let's see what you can do." But we'll Higgs ended it in the end with a screamer.
Yeah, that was a cool that in that last goal was fantastic. So. Yeah, but I didn't see it in live. I've only watched the highlights, so can't talk too much about it. But it looked like it was a bit of a thriller. In
And of
not.
course, that's a game that we obviously don't talk about here at the Same Old Wombles, because we're that woke and dismissive of the I can't even remember who it's sponsored by now, isn't it? Some
Bristol Street, I think it is, isn't it? Bristol Street Motors.
That's right. I
Yeah.
mean, I think when you get sponsored by a second-hand dealership, it's kind of saying, it says everything.
I saw one of their cars like in Southampton recently. It said like Bristol Street Motors. I was like, wow, they're actually a car. They are actually real.
Well, Angus, what's your thoughts on it? I mean, I know it obviously it brings us in. I mean, it's listen, it brings us in. What's it, 10K a win, something like that?
Don't know what the numbers are, but I know that a lot of our members don't appreciate it because of the sort of feeling that there's a set of B teams playing in it as well as teams like us. And there's a feeling that that's a bit unfair, and I get that. But from my point of view, I always think we should be supporting our team. And if our manager and our coaching staff and our team are putting out a team to play the game, then we should support them at least, even if we don't fully agree with the competition itself. So we're in the competition. We decided to participate in it, and so we support our team participating in it. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, I think, well, I think most of us here, who do the Sandwobbles, we're not really into the ethos of it. But that said, last week when the game was happening, we're all on WhatsApp going, "We're one up, we're two up,
Yeah,
we're three up." You know?
you might not, you still want to know what happened, right? Yeah,
Oh
so.
yeah, totally. And I wanted to watch the goals, so it was. And in actual fact, it's the goals that I want to talk about because, after the Salford game, which was that was a bit of a come down because I think we all thought that the role that we were on and getting back to playing that was almost a give me. I thought some of our fans, I mean, I certainly did, thought that it's almost like 3 points. I know football doesn't work like that, but having that game midweek and winning it and scoring those goals, I think lined us up well for the Carlisle game. So I didn't know what you thought about that, Adam. Did the goals help us get us on a bit of a goal scoring roll?
Yeah, I mean, must have done, I guess. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything from Carlisle, to be honest. I thought it'd be a great atmosphere because we're all back and it was going to be sold out, and they had the resale ticket option on, so that meant it was good, busy. And I know that we did a resale on the day, and someone bought one of our tickets, so it's clearly it was a people were quite hyped to go. The atmosphere was great, but yeah, I mean, I guess more goals you score statistically, the more likely you are to keep doing that because you kind of got your eye in, haven't you? And I was just, it was, yeah, I don't know. It's just annoying that most of the goals at the other end to where I sit. It's just like, I want to see it nearer.
And Angus, where are you in the stadium? Where do you sit?
I'm in 105 in the main stand, which is like two rows down from the dugout, towards the south stand. But on Saturday, I was in the boardroom because we had our MP visiting us,
Oh,
and I'd
yeah.
met him a couple of times, and I'd taken him around the stadium during the floods when we had the digger on the pitch, and took him on a big walk round and showed him all the flood damage and what have you. And he, we invited him to come to the game to see us on a match day, to soak up our experience. And we had a great time, actually. He was really, he's a Palace fan, but we forgive him for that.
Do we?
But
Do we, Angus?
we do, because he in his maiden speech in the House of Commons, he made a
Okay.
big deal about the
Yeah.
fact that Wimbledon was in his constituency, and they were far more positive about the football regulator than Palace were. And he said that in his, or worse to that effect, in his speech. So we like him for that, and he's a really thoroughly nice guy too. So I was up there watching the game. It's a bit different up there because we had obviously Carlisle's owners in the room with us as well, and I met them beforehand and spoke to them, American Floridians actually, so they know a lot about flooding in recent times. But
Yeah.
they were over for a period to support the club and meet their fans and what have you, and they're thoroughly interesting people to talk to. And then we sat down to watch the game, obviously, and quite quickly it started to look like it was going to be our day. And then, interestingly, the reaction of the Florida owners was one of kind of quite a lot of disappointment. And I dare I say it, I think they were slightly envious of us on the day.
Yeah.
I think they saw what we have, some of the ingredients that we have inside our club, the fantastic stadium we've got, this incredible fan base, and a team that really turned up on Saturday. Before the game, I was slightly nervous about the game, actually, because it's a big deal, big game back, going to
Yeah,
be a
yeah.
big atmosphere. Easy for previous Wimbledons to have kind of lost that on the day in the height of the excitement, but we didn't do that. The team were absolutely astonishing to watch. Brilliant. Really enjoyed it.
I have to say, I thought we were incredibly disciplined. Like
Yeah,
JJ's
wasn't
got
it?
this thing to us because we didn't lose our heads and we didn't go completely all out. We took our chances. For me though, the one thing I felt so sorry for the Carlisle fans because what is going on? I mean, they're just passed the ball to death. Just
And a lot of them turned up too.
there was
And
loads of them. I was expecting like an Accrington type crowd.
I'm told that I think the owners were going on to a Carlisle, London supporters club meeting afterwards, or dinner or something. And so there's quite a big expat London fan base for Carlisle that go to a lot of their away matches. That's how it was presented to me. And they're still partially fan owned, don't forget. And I met the guy there who was really their representative on the board from the fans' perspective. I think they're down at 10% ownership, which is way lower than we'd ever. I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit later, but it's way lower than Wimbledon would ever consider going to. But they still have some protections in place with that. But they were disappointed in the day. They felt like they didn't turn up to the game. And of course, Matty got a hat trick as well, which is, saw him walking off with the ball at the end, which is always I always think, great, that's great. You deserve it.
It was brilliant. I was so pleased for him. I really was. And it feels like we've got, because we hark back to, do you know what? I'm getting that old now. I can't even remember the season, but that, the season with you had Lyle Taylor and Tom Elliott and Akinfenwa and Aziz, and now we've got that four. And this for me feels like the perfect matchup is Bugle and Stevens, and then you bring on Pigton, Kelly. And I just think we've got something there, and it's just
Tell you the other thing I saw that I haven't seen quite as abundantly, and it was passing with foresight, little passes forward to where the player was going to be, because they knew that's where he was going to be. And I haven't seen us do that before. And I thought, oh yeah, that's really something. That's a real move forward. Imagine that 2 years ago, it would have been impossible to think of.
It's amazing. And Ali Smith played well. And then because obviously you're coming onto the game and you're looking at the back line and you're thinking, that just looks really, I mean, like comparatively, you think it looks quite weak with ball in the middle and Oggs and Harbottle. I mean, just, to win 4-0 without Lewis and without Johnson on the pitch just is amazing. To just proves how versatile and what depth of strength we have.
I saw someone online saying Ball should have been a possible man of the match, actually, and I agree with that. He really played.
And there's a great moment, isn't there, where towards the end of the game they're looking to get consolation. I think Goodman's come diving out. This is the first rush of the head I think we've had in the whole game, and it comes in like the almost the 90th minute. And it's headed out, and then they're headed it back, and it's going in. But Ball's sort of throwing himself across the goal to stop it. He's done fantastically. I mean, it was an amazing, perfect game. What were you thinking, Adam? What was your takeaways from it?
I was just kind of a bit I was a bit sidelined by it. I didn't really know what was going on. It was just, it was just really good. I kind of, like I said, I was overly excited, which normally means I'm going to get extremely disappointed. And then, it was just, I was worried because we didn't have, Lewis and Johnson, and I just wasn't sure what would happen. So it was a bit weird. I kind of was like, what is happening? How are we scoring all these goals? And how come we've got them so early? And I was obviously, then I was panicking, like I always do, that we'll change our mode and go into some sort of defensive mode that we can't sustain. But we didn't. I mean, I thought after half time, we might be in, I didn't know what Jackson was going to say to them at half time. I thought, oh, if we change stuff up too much, it could really put us on the back foot. And we didn't. And then came out and scored, So yeah, I'm still processing it, to be honest, because it's a bit like, what's going on? We're not used to scoring that many goals.
It was fantastic, and I think one of my favourite moments was the chant from the supporters to the manager. It's happening again, because obviously he was in charge when franchise were in town.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
I thought they caught the moment there. That was brilliant.
It took a while for people to realise, I think, that it was a franchise manager, and then suddenly once they realised.
There was also the comedy chant when we had the replacement referee and the linesman was warming up. That was so funny. And the South Stand was singing, "He's got his flag, he's got his flag." It
It
cracks me up when that happened so quickly.
was so funny because that was it. Because obviously there's that moment in the game where the ref's gone down with something, and that whole process seemed to take forever to get the
It was
replacement on.
funny. It was
And the
funny.
guy's running up and down, the linesman come on, running come down, he's just like, he's forgotten his flag. I think he was warming up,
He was
but
warming up, but he clearly felt that it was his big moment.
yeah, he really did, didn't he? It was so funny. So playing up to the crowd, it was brilliant. But talking of franchise, of course, the women's team played them on Saturday, and
Bumby.
they weren't content for just 3-0. They went five. Amazing, an amazing result. And I think a lot of us thought that when we stepped up to level three, isn't it now, that it would be a real step up and a real struggle for us. But I think we found our form. We're kind of mid-table-ish, aren't we? It looks like what they called hashtag. Are they actually called hashtag? Is that right? The side who's good grief. But I think they've put a lot of resources in, and they're currently top. And I know we had a bad game against them a week ago, but the game against Franchise was fantastic. Always brilliant to beat them. And it just feels like we're getting. It just feels like that's not so much of a worrying game at the moment. So anyhow, I'm not going to say that anymore.
And where was Sunday's game played? Was it at Plough Lane or
It was
not?
at Rains Park.
It was at Rains
It
Park.
was at
Okay.
Rains Park Vale. It
Yeah.
was going to be at Plough Lane, but I think they were quite worried about the impact on the pitch, given the repairs that had been made on the pitch.
Yeah.
So they moved it to Rains Park Vale, and I watched it online. I couldn't go this Sunday, but I watched it on the AFC Wimbledon Women's TV channel, which
Yeah.
you can get on your iPad. So that's completely brilliant. If you can't get to the game, and it was great fun to watch because we gave them a proper stuffing, and I think that's what you must do with the franchise when you play them, whoever they are,
Yeah.
whichever team it is. And it's almost as if the women were saying, anything you can do, we can do better, because they
I
got
love it.
five. And then Ashley Hinks got sent off at the end with a red card, but it was absolutely unfair in my opinion, although I'm not a referee. And it's a shame, but she can hold her head up high because, they all played a blinder. It was a really terrific game of football to watch.
But Ashley Hinks is sort of like a club legend now, isn't she? I mean, she's just come in and she's been our top goal scorer, I think, for the last couple of seasons. She's just an amazing player. I was really pleased because when we were doing a little while ago, we put together the historic cartoon, which now sits outside the bar area, the big outside the Phoenix. And we were wanting to make sure that we had a women represented in there, and we've got Ashley Hinks top right of that cartoon, and I think she is going to go down as a club legend in many years to come. And it's great that we've got a woman footballer who's going to be that part of our club legends. And I think that's a great thing. And I was only hoping that she got sent off for doing something horrendous to one of their players, but
No,
never mind.
I think it was more that the other players sort of made more of what happened in
Oh.
the way that you might expect the
Yeah.
franchise to behave. So.
Yeah, what a surprise. Angus, before we get anything else, the pitch itself. Because those pitches just looked horrendous, but it feels like we've managed to deal with that brilliantly, to be honest
It's
with you.
incredible, isn't it? But
Yeah.
so when I went on the Wednesday, I think. It happened on the Monday morning. And I'd had a message from the MP who I'd been talking to saying, can I help? Can I come and have a look? And so I said, yeah, I'll take you, because I didn't want to bother the rest of the team. I just checked it with James Woodruff and said, is it okay if I bring the MP up? I don't want to bother you guys. I know you're really busy, but he wants to have a look around. And of course they said yes. So we did that. And that was the day that the digger was on the pitch. You saw the pictures on the
Yeah.
web, and it was just horrifying, absolutely horrifying, to look around, because they just about ripped all the carpet up from the reception and the ground floor, and there's still water everywhere all around the pitch, and where our kiosk is, for example, that's on a quite a high bit of
Yeah.
foundation, but there was water everywhere around the ground. And in fact, it took us a while to figure out a way to get in, to walk around the ground, around the inside without getting, wet. So, but we did, and we walked walking around, and actually you couldn't really see, apart from that corner, any problems with the pitch, particularly. But in that corner, it did look really, really bad. And gosh, I didn't really believe that we would get the Carlisle game on. And when they started to say, yeah, we think we can get the Carlisle game on, I was kind of, wow, that's really something if they can do that. So as I understand it, they relayed, invisibly mended, or whatever it is that they do. I have no idea how that technology works. Then tamps it, and nurtured it over a few days to get it into a position where it was playable. And up from where I was on the second floor, you could see the joins sort of, but you couldn't see any problems particularly with the pitch. I don't know if you ever watched the Big Match Revisited for the games from like the 70s, and it's just all mud in the in the. And it's nothing like those days. It's a very playable pitch, and it obviously passed all the inspections it needed to pass. My concern about it, of course, is that I think perhaps most of our supporters will think, "Oh, that's it then; that's all finished." It's really not, though. Downstairs is like a bomb site. The offices are all, everything is stacked on desks while they're digging out the skirting boards and getting rid of any opportunity for damp, and then they're going to have to relay all of that and then redo all the carpets. So it's going to be months before that's back to normal. And the most difficult bit, I think, is probably the lifts, because lift shafts go below the ground level, so they fill up with water. All this stuff is, condemned or whatever, and it's got to be replaced, and the parts are on quite long and difficult lead times. So that's really difficult. That's going to take a long time to sort out. But the club have been magnificent, and everyone who's associated with it. I mean, all I did was walk around the pitch with someone and take them upstairs to meet the MD. It's not exactly a big task, but everyone else has been just working. When I arrived there, there was someone out the front just sweeping water into the drains where the front
Jeez.
was, and they were still there when I left. That's just what they were doing all day. And a kind of thankless task, but it shows you how much pride people have in the stadium and the club, that everyone was just, no, we're not going to let this beat us. We're just going to go for it. I took the MP in to see Matt in the shop, and kind of doorstepped him really, which I've already apologized to him for, because I shouldn't really have done that. But he was brilliant. He showed us, the storerooms and all the stock that had been damaged. But actually, we really dodged a bullet, because most of the stock
It's on racks,
is on racks, so it's higher up off the floor. And he was just in full damage limitation. And then by that Friday, they'd opened for the comedy night, and they'd opened the store as well. It's just incredible.
I have to say, I went into the shop. Well, I tried to go into the shop on Saturday after the game, and it was heaving. You couldn't move in there. It was absolutely heaving. I think I caught Matt's eye. Once or twice, and it was just like he couldn't believe how packed it was. It genuinely was. And I think there was something on X today saying that usually if they couldn't meet their targets for September, obviously, because there were three games that weren't there. But and I know there's only a couple of games in October, but Saturday's game, he says, it's given them a fighting chance of actually meeting targets. It was
Incredible.
that round, and Matt's just done a fantastic job. But with the pitch itself, I'm right in saying that what's happened is that there's a tank that's underneath the ground that's simply filled up so quickly it kind of burst. So we're not talking about a sinkhole. It was
And
like
it's not
it
a,
burst and went up.
yeah, and the press called it a sinkhole, which of course caught everyone's imagination. And it's a very photogenic story with like golf bunkers. Somebody said it's not the crazy gang, it's crazy golf, which really made me laugh, but probably shouldn't have done. And
But there's multiple tanks, though, isn't there, underneath? There's more than one.
you think a tank is like a galvanized steel thing, like you see a water tower. It's not like that at all. It's more like a bunch of milk crates full of gravel, and then a kind of membrane like a around it. And that's what burst. That's why it burst in that corner, because that was where the pressure was for it. So what's happened is, they've done enough remediation of that to make the pitch playable, but we're not going to know really till the end of the season. So we're going to have to, at the end of the season, do a proper investigation of it and decide what remediation is going to be required. And that's really tricky, because What if it happens again immediately after we do the remediation? You know, and the same thing could happen again. And how would we really stop that? There's all sorts of questions to ask ourselves about the right approach to it. And fortunately, we've got, you know, some great expertise helping us. The insurance people have been brilliant, and we'll find the right solution for it. But it's not going to be quite as simple as add another drain or something. It's going to be more complicated than that, I think, for us to figure out the right longer term solution for it.
Do you think we'll be all right? Because I mean, if this happened, is there a chance it could happen again this season?
But it's one of those things. I think it's a once in a generation, or once. I think the last time the Wandle flooded like this was in the late 60s, so that's a very long time ago. And so, but you know, you can't say
Yeah, you can't
it's
say
not
no.
going to happen, because if you do that, it inevitably does happen.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to think it isn't going to happen again, and I'd like to think the pitch is now going to be playable for the rest of the season, and that's the working assumption that we've got, is that we've got it back. And of course, every day and week of growth it gets now that it's been mended, if you like, it will improve the surface too. So that's got to be good. But I think we need to try and look at a bigger summer, longer term, what are we really going to do about it kind of discussion before that, and then activity to examine it during the summer.
And
And of course, we can't really talk about this without saying thanks to Graham Stacey once again. I've thanked him in person on Saturday. I saw him, and I've also emailed him. But I mean, it's a tremendous thing that he's done to raise the awareness and do this crowdfunding. It's just terrific. And that money's going directly to the excess on the insurance, and then will over time help us with these decisions that we're going to make about what we're going to do about it.
I was wondering about that. So that, well, that's great that it's actually going to, you know, it helps with the excess because that would have been horrendous to do. I can only imagine what that is. But also to know that it will be used to make any changes we need to over the summer.
I was
So
going to say, I guess as well, that some of the people in the flats and whatever will also want to have conversations, because obviously some of the lower car parks flooded. So there'll be concerns that I guess the concerns will be that the flooding plans that we put into place maybe are not strong enough because of this happening.
I don't know about that. I know that there was a detailed analysis done when the stadium was built, and it was built to survive the flooding that was expected, and it was built to the regulations that were required at the time. And I assume that's the case with the flats too. But you're right, they have lower levels than us with the car parks. And so I don't know what exactly happened to them. I hear that they got flooded out pretty badly, but I don't have any detail of it. And I'm not aware of a great deal of dialogue between us and them, not between the trust anyway. They might be at the club, I've no idea.
Well, since, I mean, I just think it's incredible that we managed to put it all together and get it working. And pitch looks amazing.
I think it's fantastic. Like the amount of, because there were some people who were really like, we're going to be stuffed for the whole of the season. It's going months, blah blah blah. You know, and it was, which is fair. It looked pretty horrendous, but the fact that we managed to turn it around is such a fantastic time. And I kind of also guessed that it's probably going to be, there's some stuff to look at over the summer, because clearly the idea was like, how do we get this pitch up and running as fast as possible, because that's going to damage us more. So yeah, I was absolutely blown away with how we've managed it. Yeah, and that bit of that corner didn't look too, didn't look too scary. And
No, it didn't look bad. And on Saturday they ran a kind of pretty full hospitality, and all the catering was in place, and that's amazing too, because there were no lifts, so those guys were busy, you know, lugging things up and downstairs to make that happen on Saturday. And again, you don't really see that from the front of house, but the people behind the scenes here are really pulling everything to make this to make the game go on as planned, really, because we need the revenue, of course. So.
yeah. And I spoke to John Lynch from Wish, because I know that the museum has been very badly affected, and I think so all the cabinets are being replaced, but it feels like that's also covered in the insurance. And so when that comes back, when that reopens, I know he's feeling very buoyed up about the fact it's going to come back bigger and better when we
Yeah,
when
I
that
think it
space is
will. I
open
don't
again.
think they lost any memorabilia.
No.
I think they just, the cabinets were, because of the water, they were, you know, they were never going to be able to be
Yeah.
used again. So that's amazing, really, that we didn't lose anything from there too.
So can I ask one more thing on the flood stuff, just because I know that through work we've also got some things around lifts, and it's been taking ages for lifts to be fixed and parts to come. And it seems like, I don't know what the deal is with lifts, but it seems like there's a shortage of lift parts around the world. Obviously, that has an accessibility issue for a number of our fans. Angus, do you know what's in place for the next few matches to ensure that our fans that need accessibility can get to the stadium as a, you know, and what are the plans to support them?
I think what, yeah, I think what we've asked is fans with accessibility needs to get in touch with us, get in touch with the club, and we will do our level best to accommodate them on a ground floor, and figure out a way to enable them to enjoy the match. We can't make the lifts work quicker than we can make them work, and that's going to be disappointing for some of our fans who've got their particular seats that they like that are higher up in the building. But there's nothing much we can do about it apart from to try and find them another adequate spot, and that's what we're focused on trying to do.
Brilliant. No, that's good to hear.
I mean, I think though that everything that's happened is a prime example of how we can get through it as a fan-owned club. I mean, and that's because we are fan-owned, you know, people have contributed so wonderfully to the fundraising campaign. We have, you know, obviously a pool of volunteers that just get down to the club as soon as possible to make sure everything is cleared. You know, sweeping away the water, for instance, and taking up the carpets. It's just incredible what this club can do. And I guess, you know, that kind of brings us on to the fact that as a fan-owned club, we have fans who can stand for the board, our Don's Trust board, and the nominations have just opened for the elections for the DTB. I think you can find out all the details about how to apply on the website. And I guess, Angus, one of the reasons that we're able to talk to you, it feels kind of sad in a weird way, is that you're stepping down.
No, I'm not. I'm not conflicted by the election, because
Awesome.
I was elected for a 3-year term last year, so
Excellent.
absolutely not.
I'd like to get off on the right foot, Angus, by
Yeah, that's
getting all my
okay.
facts completely wrong. As I was
Absolutely.
just saying, cut this bit, Adam. Adam, we'll cut this bit. We'll go to what I'm just about to say now. So, what I'm delighted about, Angus, is that you're as the chair of the DTB for many years to come. You're able to talk to us about the DTB. I need to ask you this one question. Then we'll skip over this, Adam. It'll be brilliant. No one will notice. When did you start supporting the team? When were you? What was your first sort of game?
My first game, gosh, was the we weren't in a league at all, I don't think, or if we were, it was a very amateur league. It was at Leatherhead. It was one of the first six games, and we played Leatherhead, and I went because it was in Leatherhead. I lived near, not far from Leatherhead. And my kids had already been in the crazy gang at the time. They were very, very young then, and we felt we had to go because it was so local, and AFC Wimbledon was just starting up. And I think that's probably either then or just before then is when I joined the Don's Trust. So it would have been 2003 or so. It was one of the first games, and I think I've been looking for it and I can't find it. But I had a T-shirt from it, but I can't find it, of course, because it's disappeared. But there was a T-shirt at that time, a yellow one with blue writing on it.
Oh, can I ask that question then? So, you know, we're the same old Wombles here, and I don't want to be disparaging. But where were you before then? What was your team? What were you doing before 2003?
Before 2008, well, it's. We got into Wimbledon because my brother-in-law bought the Crazy Gang membership for my son just after he was born, and it was at that time, I think, the Crazy Gang was like the Junior Dons kind of thing back then. And of course he was thrilled, my brother-in-law, this is not my son, because he was just a baby, because he brought the program. There's a picture of my son in the program, it's just with this baby photo. Youngest Don's Trust member or whatever at that of that particular time. And I'm talking to my wife, and my wife's family and brother-in-law and co, they're all very big Wimbledon FC and now AFC Wimbledon fans, but they were big Wimbledon fans right back from Donsford Div 4 back then, you know.
Yeah.
I said to my wife, "Well, I guess that means we must be AFC Wimbledon now, because I can't not, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to destroy my son's inheritance now. He's been a crazy gang member just as I'm born." So that's where I became allegiant to AFC Wimbledon, if you like. When I was a kid, I used to go to Fulham quite a lot
I'm
in the
so,
80s.
so sorry you had to suffer for so long.
Yeah, and Fulham was fun then. And if you watch old episode of the Sweeney, you can see Fulham's ground in the period when I used to go to it. It was, you know, when it was all open plan,
Yeah.
and you just used to get rained on, and everyone smoked, and you know, there were rotten pies for sale. So that was
Happy
the
day.
sort of that era, 1982 sort of era.
Cool, Bennett. Oh wow. Well, and so you and so now you've been you were supporting this side for, you know, I always lose track of time. The fact it's been over 20 years now we've been running. What made you think that you want to stand for the DTB? What was that? What was your decision for standing?
I'd never considered it before, and I had a season ticket at King's Meadow for a couple of years early on, and then my job was really travelling all the time, so I was not really around enough to go to the games. I went to the fans forum, the infamous fans forum, a couple of years ago at Plough Lane,
Yeah.
and I live tweeted it because it was supposed to be being broadcast, but it wasn't because of some technical
Oh,
problem.
yeah.
And so I just decided, okay, well, I'll just live tweet it because I'm sitting here and it will make me remember everything that was said. So I did that, and of course I got loads of Wimbledon fans replying to me saying, "Brilliant, thanks for doing this. We were wondering what was going on." And I thought, okay, that's kind of fascinating. And I thought that night that the people up on the stage were doing a really decent, trying to do a really decent job of explaining what was happening, but we're not quite getting that through to the audience. The audience was sort of neutral to slightly hostile at times, and I came away from that meeting thinking, and that was the first time I'd ever been to a meeting like that at Plough Lane. I'd had the Don's Trust stuff in the post for years. I voted in the Back in Two Ticks campaign. I always voted for the members of the board and what have you all the way through, but never really more active than that. And I'm just sitting at home thinking about it, thinking, you know, I don't know, I could be one of these people out on Twitter moaning about stuff, or I could just try and get involved a bit more. And then they put out a notice to Don's Trust saying they wanted to co-opt people, and they were looking for certain things. And one of the things they wanted was ability to manage people that didn't report to you from different groups, or, you know, something like that. It was something about stakeholders that weren't in your direct orbit that might be complicated. And I applied, and I eventually ended up having an interview. And I said, "Look, I don't know anything about, you know, football strategy or anything else, but I do know a lot about managing stakeholders who don't report to me because I'm a product manager, and that's my whole life. You know, getting things out of people who don't want to give them to you." Who don't report to you, who have to be made interested in what you want. And the person who interviewed me, I think it was Graham Price, he said, "We've got plenty of people who know how to do the football. We need more people like you. Would you come on?" So I joined the board as a co-optee last summer. And got stuck in to trying to help rather than anything else. So I mentioned that I live tweeted. I did a lot of work with Twitter and Twitter, particularly from a technical perspective, from a development perspective. And I wanted to try and help us to fix our engagement on social media, and particularly on pro boards. So I took over moderating pro boards after everyone else on the board had tried to talk me out of doing that, by the way, said it was going to be too difficult to do. But I decided to have a go at it, and I think we did a pretty decent job of it, actually. But it's a very difficult thing to manage, our social persona. And I'm sure you guys know that. You have one, and you know how difficult that can be, and all the different communities you're trying to address, and then how that plays out when you reply to something. Then last November, the elections came up, and I'd been appointed until the end of the year as a co-optee, and I thought, well, if I'm going to really make a mark here and try and really help, I should stand for election. And it's something I really had to spend a lot of time thinking about whether I wanted to do that or not. And I took counsel from my family and from my friends, and I decided to stand. And I wrote a manifesto, and I put in the form. And I think this is the thing that's really interesting. Perhaps it's quite a thing to make that final press the final send button on the nomination form, because it's a really big deal to decide to do that. And I did it, and I'm so glad I did it, because I've just had this most amazing opportunity to be part of the machinations and inner workings of this club and our fantastic trust. And I'm working with really some fantastic people. The people on the Don's Trust board are all to a person brilliant. The secretariat is brilliant. Everyone works so hard behind the scenes, although again, you wouldn't see it. It's like that iceberg diagram where the little bit of the iceberg is at the top of the above the ocean, and there's all this stuff going on underneath it that you don't see. And it's the same with the management of the club, and I've got to know them over the last year, and I've got to know the people on the PLC board. And then in January, I got invited to be the vice chair, which I was kind of absolutely totally surprised about, but decided to do it to the best of my ability. And then in September, I became the chair of the Don's Trust board, and I still have to kind of pinch myself that that's the role that I'm in, because it's such a tremendous privilege to have that role, and to be kind of helping to steer the ship, if you like, in terms of providing governance for the football club and representing the interests of all of our members. But it all comes back to that reading the nomination form and making the decision to participate. And I know not everyone can do that, but I would encourage everyone listening to your podcast today to really think if they could or would consider standing for the board, because it's an absolutely brilliant thing to do. And I can promise you it'll be interesting, and you'll learn an awful lot about the inner workings of football, some of which you can't really talk about because there's the stuff that we deal with that's confidential for all sorts of reasons, commercial reasons or HR reasons or whatever. But you also get, I hope, to see us deliver on this vision for that we have for our football club, which is to, you know, to aspire to the championship as a fan-owned, sustainable club. That's a massive thing, a massive vision for us to have. And it doesn't mean that we can do that in 10 minutes. It's going to take years for us to do that. We've first of all got to get promoted from this league into EFL One, and then we've got to be stable in EFL One. That's probably another couple of seasons, isn't it? Then you've got to get to the top of EFL One, and you've got to be consistently at the top of EFL One, and then you've got to make it into the championship to get there. And then you've got to try, don't know how, but we'll find a way to remain in the championship. But what else, what other volunteer role could you hope to pick up by filling in a form to nominate yourself to be a part of the Don's Trust, where you could have that as your objective? It's just so exciting. And if we can put in the ingredients to take us on that journey to become even more financially sustainable, even more successful as a football club, and work our way up the pyramid, then we're doing all the right things. If we can do those things, we get to send a message to the rest of the 92 that there's a different way, that you don't have to have a wealthy benefactor who just shovels money into a club, that you can do this in a sustainable way. And if we can do that, then we can change the nature of the way football works. And that's, gosh, that's, you know, that's just so exciting.
But you're Angus, you're selling it. You really, I mean, I've always thought, for me, because my brother's been on the DTB, and obviously Mark and Alex, who are part of the same one, was they were there on the DTB. But I know from Nar's point of view, it felt like, I mean, I think I worry about, I think the one thing is the time commitment that people put into it, and then sometimes the online abuse that people get. So I think you've got to be in a particular way. And I felt, I mean, I felt for you, to be honest, Angus, at the last at the SGM, I was, when I was looking at that and I was looking at the way that it was set up, and there was obviously you and the DTB members on the stage, and the people who put the resolutions were not. And I didn't know whether that would, that had to be a decision, or whether everyone could be on the stage, because it did feel like a lot of things was being thrown your way. So I
Yeah,
guess.
it's quite adversarial that, and I don't know what you do about that. We talked about it, and should we all should one member of the DTB be at each table? And it's like it's impossible for the Zoom to do that. It just doesn't work. And or could we have a sofa and like be like a TV chat show kind of thing? And that doesn't really work either. So it's sort of stuck by the formality of the occasion a bit. And that SGM was member generated, as correctly formed and correctly called by the members to do what they wanted to do, but that set some risk that there were some constraints because of that about how that meeting needed to be run, and it was difficult. And as people on the boards were saying to me, well, you've been kind of stuck in right at the deep end, and the first thing you're going to have to deal with is a as a member SGM, and it's going to be complicated. But I think we were okay. And what was lovely afterwards is I got lots of messages from people checking in on me. And I listened to your podcast a couple of weeks ago. I think you had Marie on and Niall talking about mental health and the Don's Trust board. And I thought that was really interesting because it is a factor. It's nice to know. For me, it was nice to get these messages checking in with me afterwards, because that's what they were doing. They were, are you okay? Did that go okay? Are you, how are you? And I really appreciated that from people. And it's not because, you know what? It's not because people want to have a pop at me particularly. It's that everybody in that room, and everybody on a Saturday, and everybody in and around the club loves this club so much, and supports AFC Wimbledon and wants nothing more than for us to win games of football. And then if there's anything that's in the way of that, whatever it is, then the Don's Trust board is the obvious place to go and vent that. Vent that frustration or those issues on. And so in a way, that's how I manage it, is to sort of answer your question. How do you manage the mental health, if that's what you're asking? I try not to take it personally. I try to believe that the people that give you vitriol, and there's a lot of it, are doing that from the right heart, if you like, which is the support for the club. And I think that's the only way you can manage that, really. Although since I've become the chair, I can't do the social media anymore. I can't manage the pro boards, and I can't manage our Twitter anymore. It's just too much. It's not particularly because I don't like doing it. It's just because it's too much to do. And I also didn't want it to become the anger show on Twitter and pro boards, because that seems to me to be wrong as well. So we've got a better team of moderators now on pro boards, with Reese, one of our members, doing an absolutely sterling job of trying to sort that place out, and Kev looking after Twitter. So it's working out quite well.
I think I mean, I was going to say, with the pro board's changes recently, they seem really good. Like the changes to the Ask the Board now that only board members can reply. I really like that change.
Yeah, it's really good that. I like it too, because you could look on that board now and see who replied. And when, so I know there's a couple that are not replied to today, for example, but we're working on the replies, but they will be made. But it's easy to see where we're at with it. Whereas before, what happens is it splinters. You get a question and then 55 other questions that are not quite the same, but almost identical. And that's really taxing for people. It's quite a burden on the board to have to deal with that stuff. And in a way, it's not fair, because the pro boards community is, the whole of the pro boards community is like 1/6 of the membership, but the active participants on pro boards is about 30 people. And so the amount of time that that takes up is not proportionate to the membership, if you see what I mean. It's not right.
I think there's things we can talk about another time. I'm just aware of time, and you've got to go and help out another club in a minute. But there's things about comms that we can come back to another time.
Though I do think that we should ask our fans to be more respectful of those who volunteered a huge amount of their time, even if they are coming from a good place, and that they think maybe before they type that everyone is here for Wimbledon, and these people are volunteers and they're volunteering a lot of time, and
That's the other. You make a good point, because when you meet people, I like to do the kiosk on a match day, kind of whether I'm supposed to be doing it or not. We have a rota for all of that, but whether I'm supposed to be doing it or not, I like to show up and talk to people. And you meet the same people who are really quite vitriolic sometimes, and they're not vitriolic at all in person. So that's not a commentary on the people, and it's not a commentary on Wimbledon. That's just a commentary on written social media versus in person, and it's a global problem. It's not a problem for us, it's a problem for our society, actually.
And I guess the other thing with the DTB again is about time and how we attract sort of like younger generation. Part of our thought, well, part of my thought in actual fact was, is there anything else you can offer people who stand as the DTB? One thought I had was that do you offer people a free season ticket, for instance? Just because it does feel like it takes up a lot of time. And is there any other way of incentivizing other people to join? But
There's
you're saying the incentive is being that voice.
the incentive is being the voice. We get nothing, and we would take nothing, actually. We get to go to the director's box on a if we're on duty. One member of the Don's Trust goes to each home game, and we can go to the away games, but we don't get expenses or anything like that. So if you want to go to an away game to be in the director's box, you've got to get there somehow. And I think that's how the John's Trust has been formed. So that is how it is. It is a lot of work. It's more work probably for me than for the others, because and it's probably more work for the three of us who are on the PLC board as well, actually, to be fair. Me, Graham, and James McDonald. Graham Price and James McDonald, because we've got a board meeting. The PLC board meeting is on Thursday. It's from 12 till 5. So some people wouldn't be able to do that because they've got work. Work would be saying, "You're having a laugh. What do you mean you're going to a board meeting for 5 hours with someone that I don't care about?" Our board meetings for the Don's Trust are in the evening. They're from like 6 till 10 once a month. We have the theme groups, which are you could call subcommittees, which look at various aspects of the remit that we have, and they meet online monthly. And then we all have other activities that we do as well. So someone sits on the women's board, for example. Someone sits on a charity board with Wish. There's activities going on all across the piece. So it is quite a bit of work, and it suits people. Dare I say it? I have got my own business and who work for themselves essentially and can manage their time in their own particular way. And that's a shame, because it would be really absolutely brilliant to get more representation on the board from younger people and from people from different, more diverse backgrounds and different employment types. One of the problems we've got as a board is that we're not as diverse as we could be, and we're going to try and fix that. We're having a young people's meeting in a couple of weeks' time. I think we've announced it, the dates of it, but we haven't announced the details of it yet. But we're going to take people on a tour, and then we're going to have a meeting with them, with the Don's Trust board in the boardroom, show them the boardroom, talk to them. And I'm really hoping that one of them might stand to join the board,
I'm
and that would
wondering
just
now,
be.
just as you're talking, like a relationship with universities as well. You know, like if you can have a chat with universities and maybe students, you know, a
Well,
student
yeah, and there's
support or whatever
also.
could be supported to go to be on the join the DTB.
There's also so many particular communities around the ground, around Wimbledon, that we don't necessarily tap into as well as we might, that we could do a better job of. The club's doing a great job of that, right? For example, the work they did to attract the Boca Juniors people just because they're blue and yellow,
Oh no.
and now they watch their games in the Phoenix, right? So fantastic, right?
No.
And there's much more we can do in terms of community outreach to bring people to our club. But also, I'd like to get that more representative on the board too, if we possibly can. But the difficulty is actually getting people to stand. And that last year we didn't have enough people stand to make it be a contested election. It's still an election. Some people have a go at me about that I'm not properly elected, but I am, because you're elected by the process, and then your election is confirmed at the following general meeting. So it's just the same as anybody else would be elected. And we've had plenty of people chairing and being on the Don's Trust board who were in non-contested elections before. But it would be better if we had a contested election,
I get a sense,
because
Angus, this time round it will be. Well, I certainly know someone else who's here who's looking to stand. Is that right? Adam is looking to. yeah, I will. I am going to just, but on just on the one thing, which is just to figure out how we enshrine fan ownership. So I probably won't get anywhere. That's like,
You
but
will. You're pushing an open door. Fan ownership is absolutely not negotiable. And if you've looked, I'm sure you have, at the upcoming meetings, there are some protections in there in these things called super restricted actions, which are one approach to enshrining some of those things even further. It's not the only approach, but it is a possible route towards enshrining that fan ownership better.
I mean, Angus, do you think there is
But
stuff that, because one of the things I've stood a couple of times, the last time I didn't stand because I didn't really feel I could bring specific things to the board. This time I'm just bringing a position. Is there anything specific the Don's Trust board is looking for in terms of those types of people are standing, or would that still be coming through co-opting, or how, like, is it, or is it just anyone who's got a passion to drive that move towards fan ownership, championship football? What is there any steer you want to give people?
don't think it's a skill set. I mean, clearly, if you've got a financial background, that's helpful. We have a debt problem, which is not a problem exactly, but we have a debt situation that we need to manage over multiple years, right? Everyone knows about that. Clearly, you need to be a member of the Don's Trust to stand, and you need to be therefore committed to the ideals of AFC Wimbledon and the Don's Trust and fan ownership in particular. Then it's more about being able to have a coherent sort of thought process and being willing to take on a task or a set of tasks to help us deliver on the program that we've got. So things like getting our newsletter out, dealing with our the parts of the organization that we work with, like the women's team, like the charities, like the management team of the club, like the PLC, and being able to pick up tasks like that, whether it's managing a risk register or managing a set of objectives for between meetings, so that things happen. Because it's not the case that things just ha we just meet once a month and talk through an agenda and then forget about the Don's Trust until the following month. It doesn't work like that. We need to be getting on with things between meetings to make sure that we don't miss important activities that we've got to participate in. And there are all sorts of curveballs. Look at the flooding, right? For example, that was the latest of the immediate action required. What are we going to do now? Crisis things that we had to manage. But there are always things like that in football, and just being available to be part of that community and communicate with the rest of the board to take decisions about things that come across our desk, it is a key thing. So I wouldn't say to anyone, don't think that you can do this. Anyone can stand for this board who's a member of the Don's Trust, who has a voice, who wants to improve our football, and you should. All you've got to do is write down a manifesto and fill a form in, and there's plenty of examples of those manifestos on the Don's Trust website. You could either read them or just write your own, and we'd be delighted to have you if you get elected, because we certainly need people with with vibrant voices who support what we're doing to take the club to the next level over the next year or so.
That is brilliant. Angus, I'm acutely aware of your time. I'm very grateful for you taking the time to see us. And I'm really pleased that you're going to be standing around for a few more years. Yeah, I'm glad
I
I
am
got
not
that
going
right.
anywhere. Absolutely not.
No,
So.
it's exactly. I'll be talking to our researcher about that.
Well, I'm very happy to come and talk to you again at some point if you would like. But in the meantime, for the elections, nominate yourselves and join us.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you, Angus. Thank you, Adam. This has been the same old Wombles. We're back.